water coming to you from the tops of the Rocky Mountains. And before we introduce this evening's guest, I'd like to recognize Bunny Singswolf, who sang that song you just heard, and Karen Lake, the author. Actually, they authored it together, and Bunny sang it. I would also put in a prayer request for our friend, Jay Lone Wolf Morales. Needs your prayers. Tonight's guest on Prophecy Keepers is Magin Ben Yosef. He's an American-born, Orthodox Jewish educated, but did not convert to Judaism. He has been a leading spokesman for the House of Joseph movement and wants to explain to everybody tonight. We'll go to about 15 more minutes, and then we'll take callers. But he would like to explain to everybody tonight how the foreign policy of the United States and Israel may, according to prophecy, end in disaster for both countries or any other country that's involved. How are you this evening, Ben Yosef?
Aho, Blue Otter. Great to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. First of all, why don't you explain to the folks what a Magid is?
Okay. Well, I was given a choice of any smicha, that's like an ordination, that I wanted, except rabbi, since I'm not Jewish, and they didn't want to set a precedent in Israel of having a non-Jewish rabbi. So I was given a choice in several things, and I chose Magid because a Magid is a storyteller, and that is in keeping with my Native American side.
So, how'd you get this gig? I mean, long story made short, how did you end up doing, you know, 2 7-year stints in Israel, and tell a little bit, the folks a little bit about the politics and everything you went through to try to get the House of Joseph recognized? Go ahead.
Well, Blotter, I was a daily newspaper editor. That was my former career of about 20 years, and I had a very strange experience with a light which shone on my face, and it was a very bright light, and it scared the bejesus out of me and a number of people in my in the newspaper office. Anyway, to make a long story short, I wound up leaving the newspaper business, went to a Christian seminary where I learned Hebrew, and then from that point moved to Israel, rejoined the media to support myself as a missionary in an all-Muslim West Bank village called Betfaji. And I lived there among the Palestinians for some time, and then eventually moved into Jerusalem proper and studied with rabbis while I was working at the Jerusalem Post as a religion writer and editor, and wrote a column. And I got involved in the politics of Israel through this column, which was opposed to a Palestinian state in Judea Samaria. Let me qualify that we're not opposed to a Palestinian state in another part of the land of Israel, but Judea Samaria is not the place that it should be, because Judea Samaria is set aside, according to biblical prophecy, as an area to reconcile the children of Joseph and the children of Judah. These comprised separate kingdoms. They were exiled 136 years apart, and they never reconciled after a civil war and the northern kingdom aligning with the enemies of the southern kingdom. So I got involved in the politics there. My last stay in Israel was in 2000 and 2001. And because I was opposed to this Palestinian state, I was arrested on 3 occasions and imprisoned without any charges ever being filed against me. I eventually was released and was told that I had to take a voluntary vacation from the state of Israel. And that's where I'm at, where I am now, in exile, here, living here in the southwest Colorado Rockies, and have aligned myself with the descendants of Geronimo's Apaches. And that's quite a story to tell. But I'll let you take the lead on.
Well, why don't you, well, first of all, to bring to everybody to remembrance, you know, if you ever went to Sunday school or if you saw the movie Joseph, you might remember 12 brothers, all descendants of Jacob, who was renamed Israel. And Joseph was the one that was very gifted and perhaps the most gifted of all of the brothers, and they became jealous. And if the coat of many colors story, this is the guy, folks. And now this man became second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. And now I guess according to the prophecy, these descendants that walked away from the land of Israel about 2,730 years ago, they have a promise that they can once again take possession of their inheritances, which are up in the mountains of Judea and Samaria. But it's on the wrong side of the green line, and I never really did understand why they wanted a non-contiguous Palestinian state when, I mean, the Palestinians have already got Gaza. I mean, that's no problem, and they could extend the homeland up the coast. And but I mean, why do the Palestinians even want that land over in the mountains? I don't. Well, water probably. But anyway, but there's a very, very dire prophecy in Obadiah. Why don't you tell the folks about that and what the Bible says will happen if these Palestinians are in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Okay. Well, let me say first of all that the children of Joseph do not inherit all of Judea Samaria, only the northern two-thirds of Judea Samaria, which is the land called the Shomron or Samaria. And it was named Samaria because whenever the northern tribes were vacated from this region, Samaritans were brought in by the Assyrian conquerors. And so the name Judea Samaria refers to the fate of Judah and the fate of Joseph, because it is Joseph's land. But Blue Otter, not only is it Joseph's land, it is also the birthright of Jacob. And, you know, the thing that we need to emphasize as far as the fate of the Palestinians who live in the territories of Joseph is that the prophet Obadiah referred to these people as the house of Esau, because perhaps of their Palestinian ultra-nationalism, their perpetual hatred of the children of Jacob. For whatever reason, the little book of Obadiah, the smallest book in the Bible, tells a story of the fate of the house of Esau who remain in the territories of Joseph. And unfortunately, our roadmap to peace in the Middle East, proposed by the Bush administration, proposes to give the birthright of Jacob to the house of Esau. You can't ask for a worse curse.
Okay, now just to remind folks, these are the two, you remember there was Jacob, there was Esau, and Esau sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. So, I never really did understand why they were trying to force a non-contiguous Palestinian state unless they really wanted to see all these people killed and to fulfill the prophecy negatively. What do you think about that?
Well, the problem we run into is the fact that whenever Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau, was pregnant with these twins, there was a battle going on inside of her womb. That's exactly how it's described in the biblical account. And she went to a prophet, and the prophet told her, in your belly are two nations. And he used the word two le'um. A le'um is a people who unite around the same ideology. But these are two different le'um, which were in the womb of Rebekah. And so this means that from birth, the children of Jacob and the children of Esau were to be kept apart. And unfortunately, our politicians in Washington do not understand this idea of separate le'umim. And therefore, they are proposing this non-contiguous state that would comprise Judea Samaria and the Gaza. Whereas the biblical Palestinian state, which, by the way, Blue Otter, if people are interested in looking at this in more detail, on my website, at www.torah-voice.org is the biblical Palestinian state, which I call the Zechariah Plan, because the prophet Zechariah alluded to this in chapter 9. And the biblical Palestinian state comprises the existing region of the Gaza, extended to Ashkelon, Ashdod, and ancient Ekron, and the very, very fertile Shephelah Valley, which would make it a contiguous state and would give the Palestinian people an area that is much, much more fertile than the land in which they're living now. As a matter of fact, the borders of Israel today are called the Green Line, because beyond that Green Line in Judea Samaria, the Palestinians have not been able to get very much to grow. And so the fertile Shephelah Valley, together with the Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Ekron, would give them enough territory and a very good livelihood. And of course, some arrangement would have to be worked out where they could still share Jerusalem. But, these are things that have to be worked out. Unfortunately, our State Department is not even thinking along these lines. And they're not realizing the curse that they're bringing on this nation. And we can see the evidence of it already. It's all around us with the mortgages and the grocery prices, the gasoline prices, the weather. It's obvious that the Creator is not very pleased about something.
Yeah, and I want to remind folks, because of his Orthodox Shemitah, Ben Yosef is qualified and allowed to teach Torah to non-Jews. So if you have a soft spot in your heart for Israel, maybe not necessarily the Zionist government that's running it into the ground, but the real Israel, and please, Ben Yosef needs your support. Go to torah-voice.org, make a donation. Ben Yosef's living by faith, folks. He's doing this without purse or script. It is a little scary, and I'm not far behind him, but he needs your support, folks. I also want to add that Ben Yosef is a scholar, and he had the support. Well, why don't you tell the folks about the support from prominent Orthodox rabbis there and what their stature was in Israel.
Okay. Well, let me say, first of all, that I've had very little contact from Israel since I've been in exile. But I do have a number of people that I stay in touch with via email. They keep me up to date on what's going on. But my smicha came from the Ribi Shani Dor, the Breslav Hasid Rav Yisrael Z. Yehuda Schneider, who was chosen to be one of the members of the revived Sanhedrin court in Jerusalem. He was a good friend of mine. We've known each other now for 17 years, and he was my mentor when I was in Israel. And whenever he was named, well, just before he was named to the Sanhedrin court, actually, he's the one who arranged with some other rabbis there that I should have some kind of authority to do what I'm doing, and so they gave me the smicha to which you refer.
So, now you had a lot of adventures over there. We don't have time to go into a lot of it. We're going to be going to a break here. I've got about a couple more minutes. Why don't you tell the folks in the couple of minutes that we've got about the timeline and why this year is so important?
Okay, the year 2008 figures in the prophecy of the return of the house of Joseph specifically, because whenever the prophet Ezekiel was told to issue a decree of exile against both the house of Judah and the house of Israel, the southern tribes and the northern tribes, Ezekiel lay on his side for 390 days for a judgment against the northern tribes. And God decreed that every day that he lay on his side would be 1 year of judgment against the northern tribes. Well, the northern tribes never repented from their sins, their transgressions. And so that judgment, according to the Torah, was multiplied sevenfold to 2,730 years. And if that 2,730 years is reckoned to begin at the time of the exile in 722 before the Common Era, you do the math, subtract 722 from 2,730, and you come up with the year 2008. So 2008 is the year that the decree of judgment against the northern tribes of Israel ends. Now, what happens after that is the question, whether the children of Joseph should now focus on reuniting among themselves, which is what I think is supposed to happen. There's two branches of the family of Joseph. There's Manasseh and there's Ephraim. And Manasseh, as hopefully we'll get into a little later, figures very prominently in the prophecies of the Native Americans and especially the Hopi migration.
Well, we've got about 10 seconds for the first break. Folks, prophecy keepers, we're about a lot of things, but we're about helping you prepare. So take a listen to this break.
Friends, January 1st, 2010 is the deadline for turning over your personal biometric readings at a regional U.S. government facility. If you don't comply with the Real ID Act, you will not be able to legally drive. Some people caught driving illegally have recently been electrically tortured before being arrested by the new police state. If you can't drive, you probably won't be able to work, purchase food, or sell. Friends, check your scriptures. This sounds like the mark of the beast described in Revelations chapter 13. SurvivalismSkills.com has helped thousands of people just like you plan for the future. At SurvivalismSkills.com, learn to convert your car to hydrogen, create a food storage program, protect yourself from cell telephone radiation, learn about intelligent water, get rid of poor health, learn Native American survival skills. Get your free Oak Ridge Labs Nuclear War Survival Skills book download now at SurvivalismSkills.com. That's SurvivalismSkills.com.
Well, we're back, and if that break didn't shock you a little bit, I would be surprised. anyway, to continue what we were talking about before the break, you mentioned Hopi prophecy during the break. Well, maybe now is a good time to introduce this to folks and how Hopi prophecy ties in with the House of Joseph.
Okay. Well, we really have two written documents that tie the Hopi prophecy to the House of Joseph. Now, as a Maggid, one of my duties is that of Mokia, which means I'm like an exegete. And an exegete should focus his attention on written evidence more than anything else. And so the two documents that I've been examining, one of them is the Book of Hopi, which was written in 1976 by Dr. Frank Waters, after Waters had lived among the Hopi and was given permission to write about their ceremonies. And he discovered that the Hopi had a tradition that seven of their cities or clans buried their weapons of war and declared a vow of peace. And this is how they became known as Hopi, because the name Hopi, according to a medicine man, Emory Holmes, at Hotavia, up on the third mesa, according to him, the name Hopi means peace. So it seems evident that they were called something else before they were called Hopi. Now, here we turn to the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon correlates with these Hopi prophecies. It was published 146 years before the Hopi traditions were even made public. And in the book known as Alma, chapter 23, verses 7 through 13, we find that the Lamanites are described as occupying seven cities in approximately the same region as the Hopi, here in the southwest of America. And these seven cities also declared a vow of peace and laid down their weapons of war. It seems that this is just too much of a coincidence for it not to be tied somehow to the Hopi prophecies. The Mormon records that these Lamanites were no longer called Lamanites after this happened. Rather, they were called anti-Nephi-Lehi's. Now, anti-Nephi-Lehi's, to me, is not a name that's going to catch on. And so it seems logical that at some point this name would be changed to reflect the peaceable nature of these people, the Hopi. We also have a prophecy in the Book of Mormon, which I believe ties very directly to the Hopi migration. Laman, who is the eldest son of his father, Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef. Now, Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef was a prophet from Jerusalem. He was descended from Joseph, however. But he and his family remained in Jerusalem after the exile of the northern tribes. Therefore, they remained in covenant with the Creator. They possibly were part of the family of Judah at that time because they were living in Jerusalem, yet they're descended from Joseph. Anyway, Laman had been a big disappointment to his father. And Lehi had to flee with his family from Jerusalem after prophesying the destruction of the Jerusalem temple 14 years before it occurred. And they fled to the south, and they came to a riverbed that adjoined with the Red Sea. And Lehi observed the rising and falling of the tide of the Red Sea and how it would fill and empty this riverbed. And so he turned and he pointed to his son, Laman, the one he'd been disappointed with. And he said, that you might be like unto this river, continually returning to the fountain of all righteousness. And that's in 1 Nephi chapter 2 and verse 9 in the Book of Mormon. Now the Hopi were told by their ruling spirit, whose name was Mossaw, essentially the same thing that Abraham was told. They're told to walk the length and the breadth of the land in all four directions and stake it out everywhere they migrate so that in the future the entire land that had been staked out would belong to the descendants of the Hopi. They were told to make these migrations to the glaciers as far south as they could travel and to the eastern and western oceans, but each time they were to return to the area from which they had left. Now, this sounds a lot like the prophecy that was spoken to Laman. And the sacred area, known today as the Four Corners of southwest Colorado, southeast Utah, northwest New Mexico, and northeast Arizona, in ancient times was known by another name. According to the medicine man Emory Holmes, again, at Hotavia up on Third Mesa, the Aztec were one of the clans of the Hopi who arrived rather late into Central and South America. And he says that the Aztec are the ones who coined the name Aztlan, which means homeland. While they didn't return, they were supposed to, they told their children to be mindful someday of their homeland, Aztlan, in the north. And here at the eastern gate, the eastern region of this Four Corners area, we've started an organization called Iglesia de Aztlan, the Assembling of Aztlan. Actually, it was chartered back in 1992, long before this name could have been associated with anything to do with the elements who are coming up from the south and are causing problems with committing crimes. There is a dimension to this name, Aztlan, which has perverted it. But here at the eastern proximity of this area, we're attempting to set up and prepare for Native American elders to come here at the eastern gate of this region. Traditionally, that's where elders came. We don't know what they'll do when they get here, but we anticipate that it has something to do with preparing for the aftermath of the Hopi purification.
Exactly. And would you like to take calls now from people that feel a kindred spirit?
I'd be delighted, Blue Water.
Well, the call-in number is toll-free 877-876-5227 in the USA only, and USA and Canada, you can call 888-815-9756. So it's 877-876-5227 in the USA, or USA Canada line 888-815-9756. 1-800-795-5756, and we'll invite anybody that'd like to call in and discuss this. And understand now when you're working with, I heard you did another interview over on another BBS station, and of course everybody knows about President Bush. Are they aware that a whole bunch of Orthodox rabbis declared him to be Gog Magog?
Well, this is one of the things that we do have on our website. It is an exegesis of the passages in Ezekiel that pertain to the infamous leader known as Gog Magog, whose objective is to steal Israel oil. Now, what I find interesting about it is if anyone will look on my website at www.torah-voice.org, there's a logo there in the right-hand corner, which is a picture of an outline of Judea Samaria that is an outline of a man wearing a crown. And the prophecies about Joseph were that the blessings of the deep, which today we would refer to as oil, but the blessings of the deep would be on the crown of the head of Joseph. And if you look at that logo, the crown, right at the top of the crown, is a little village called Megiddo, which is, of course, the site of the future Battle of Armageddon. And it appears that what is going on in the territories of Joseph is that the Saudis, who influenced the Bush administration to propose this suicidal plan for Israel, are attempting to steal the oil of Israel with the help of George W. Bush, who the Jerusalem Sanhedrin court recently gave a scroll declaring him to be the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And if you read in Ezekiel chapter 38 and chapter 39, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal is this infamous Gog. There are some interesting things about that name, Gog. First of all, in Hebrew, the name George would be spelled exactly like Gog, because in Hebrew, the tendency of the resh, the R sound, to assimilate is quite common, especially with the name George, because George is a name that is difficult for a native Hebrew speaker to pronounce. Rather, George is called Joj, J-O-J, Joj. And if you transliterate J-O-J into Hebrew, since there is no J sound in Hebrew, you have to use the G. And therefore, George W. Bush is Gog W. Bush. And whenever you take the gematria, now gematria is a means of assigning a numerical value to every letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The first 10 letters have the value of 1 through 10. The next 10 letters have the value of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and so on up to 100. And the last three letters, 200, 300, and 400. If you take the gematria of the name Joj Walker Bush, it is 666.
Well, isn't that interesting? And this is the guy that's, you know, sitting with a finger on the button in Washington, D.C., and it makes me wonder what is going to happen next, you know, if the House of Representatives and the Senate and the legislators of the United States, if they can't figure out how to save the economy, there are executive orders that have been enforced for quite a while that would enable President Bush to declare different levels of martial law, like the martial law that worse than we've got, because basically, you know, we're not under any kind of constitutional law. And yes, folks, I am a Ron Paul supporter. I support the great law of peace of the Haudenosaunee, and they got the United States, according to Ben Franklin, modeled their law after the great law of peace. And there is only one person in Washington, D.C. that's for the Constitution. That's Ron Paul. And you know, here's a guy, folks, that, I mean, his name wasn't allowed to be mentioned at the Republican convention. Any delegate that showed up with pro-Ron Paul materials had them taken, confiscated, literally. If anybody tried to take the stand and mention his name, their microphone was shut off. So there's your guy, folks. You know, if you think either the other two candidates are going to change anything. And Ben Yost, you understand you had a spiritual experience here recently on this subject. You want to tell folks about it? About not being fooled?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I was listening. I was staying up late writing, and I was listening to a broadcast of Coast to Coast AM. And George Norrie, who narrates that, does musical interludes between the news. And the musical interlude was from The Who, the song Don't Get Fooled Again. And there's a line in that song that goes something like, we better get on our knees and pray. And then there's a pause, we don't get fooled again. Well, I had been praying specifically about the Palin, the vice president, and you know, that was what was in my spirit, was to pray that we didn't get fooled again. And then a couple of days later, I went to the Purification Lodge here, the Apache Purification Lodge, and I think it was during the Spirit Round, the second round of the lodge, that Ten Rivers prayed the exact same words about the presidential election. Grandfather, help us not to be fooled again. And then I got a third sounding with the same words. And so I felt like it was very important that before any Native American decides in this election, that we should determine exactly where these candidates stand on a few key issues. And from my perspective, they relate to spiritual issues, because I personally believe that. And let me ask, does anybody else on the face of Turtle Island think that we're under a curse? Because I think the evidence points that we are. And so, I believe before we would support Palin or Obama or any of the candidates, that we should know exactly what their position is on this suicidal roadmap to peace in the Middle East and a Palestinian state somewhere other than Judea Samaria. Hello? Hello? Can't hear you.
Prince, January 1st, 2010 is the deadline for turning over your personal biometric readings at a regional U.S. government facility. If you don't comply with the Real ID Act, you will not be able to legally drive. Some people caught driving illegally have recently been electrically tortured before being arrested by the new police state. If you can't drive, you probably won't be able to work, purchase food, or sell. Friends, check your scriptures. This sounds like the mark of the beast described in Revelations chapter 13. SurvivalismSkills.com has helped thousands of people just like you plan for the future. At SurvivalismSkills.com, learn to convert your car to hydrogen, create a food storage program, protect yourself from cell telephone radiation, learn about intelligent water, get rid of poor health, learn Native American survival skills. Get your free Oak Ridge Labs Nuclear War Survival Skills book download now at survivalismskills.com. That's survivalismskills.com.
Well, folks, we're back from the break and putting a good scare into you. You know, we're not trying to scare people. We're trying to convince them it's time to do something. And, of course, at Prophecy Keepers, we teach, you know, how to get in touch with the Creator. And, but this is what we do full-time, folks. Neither Ben Yosef and I have any other means of support. And in order for this show to continue weekly, and we would like to get on more often. There's a lot of things that we could do. And but anyway, be sure and offer Ben Yosef your support. Well, before we went on break, you were talking about the political situation. and how it's important not to be fooled. I understand there were some and the rumor mill said that there's some interesting things going on in our military, and I heard one rumor that a DEFCON 1 order was given, which would, under certain circumstances, would release our military commanders to engage anyone that might be engaging our fleets. So what do you think, you know, going on in the Straits of Hormuz and with Israel? You know, a lot of people are kind of concerned right now. And what do you think about the military situation, Ben Yosef?
Well, this is really not an area of my expertise, but I would say one thing, that when a nation is under burst, it could extend to all aspects of American experience, including the military. I personally believe our involvement in Iraq is related to this same curse, because in during the administration of George, or I should say H.W. Bush, because George H.W. Bush also has an association with the name GOG, which we may talk about in a few weeks. We're trying to line up some more information about the actual source of this curse that has come upon the United States. But there's a scripture, Genesis chapter 12 and verse 3, which spells out a spiritual principle. It's God speaking to Abraham, and he says to him, Abraham, I will bless those who bless you, but those who curse you, a curse will come upon them. They will cause themselves to be cursed, in other words. So when George H.W. Bush convinced the our allies and the Arab nations not to align with Saddam Hussein in the 1991 Persian Gulf War, immediately after the ceasefire of that war, within a few days, Secretary of State James Baker came to Jerusalem with a suitcase. And in that suitcase, he had several demands. And one of these demands was that Israel must no longer build settlements in Judea, Samaria. And the settlements that were there should be dismantled. Apparently, this was a deal that had been struck between the George H.W. Bush administration, Secretary of State James Baker, and Palestinians who lobby Washington in order to get a Palestinian state. And that's when the pressure began for the Palestinian state, was at the close of this war. I personally believe because the United States chose Iraq, a land that has long been condemned in the Bible.
Also known as Babylon.
Also known as Babylon. But a land that's long been condemned over the territories of Joseph and preparing the territories of Joseph for the return of the children of Joseph, that this is why, spiritually, we're in Iraq today.
Very interesting. Yeah, and you know, you know, the Bushes don't just have their thumb in the eye of Israel. They got their thumb in the eye of the Apache nation. So we want to tell them, remind the folks about the skull of Geronimo.
Okay, I don't know how much we want to talk about that right now, Blue Otter, because
or we can talk about whatever you like. We've got about 11 more minutes left.
Okay, I'd like to get Jimmy Ten Rivers to talk to you about that. And,
oh, is he there with you?
No, he's not.
Okay. We'll do another interview.
Yeah. But I'll say this much. Yes, it's true that Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the president, was the individual who led the raiding party at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and dug up the skull of Geronimo and took it to Yale University and established the Skull and Bone Society. They also took the skulls of some other young Apaches. We believe the skull of Mangus Coloradus, who was also a revered Apache leader, who was killed by the army in Mexico, and his head has never been found. Anyway, this...
And Mangus was a Membrano.
Right, he was a Membrano. And the Apache here, descendants of the people of Geronimo are uniting under the Mimbreno. And let me just put in a real quick plug for what we're doing here again. I am a member of the board of directors of Iglesia de Atlan. I'm a spiritual elder among the Apache, and I'm a member of the board of directors of Turtle Tribes, and therefore I have been permitted to share this vision of Atlan. But there's a band of about 60 families of Apache, and we're joined by growing numbers of Chicano. And we have been told by the Spirit, and this has been confirmed time and time again, to prepare for the arrival of Native American elders. Now, this is in keeping with many Native prophecies for the last times, but the one that is most specific that comes to my mind is from the Oglala Sioux, that a place should be prepared in the mountains for the time just before great fires sweep the plains, where elders will come to plan how to steward and heal the land after the purification. And we believe place is somewhere in proximity of the eastern gate of this sacred Four Corners region, Atlan. And again, this is the gate where traditionally elders assemble.
And you know, when I first met, of course I've known you probably since about 2000, year 2000, and on and off, you know, either been reading your reports that came out of Israel or, you know, we started corresponding and, you know, picking up a friendship 2-3 years ago. But anyway, just met Jimmy Ten Rivers this last January, and when I heard that prophecy, I went, oh my gosh, because back somewhere in the summer of 2006, Creator talks to me every once in a while, and you know, there's details at prophecykeepers.com, but he told me something really, really far-fetched. And it was to warm me up and get me ready for what he told Jimmy. What he told me was that money needed to be raised for travel expenses for elders to come to a certain place. Anyway, it just said that we need to raise a lot of money for travel expenses for these elders to meet and literally save the planet. And I was told, you know, that more information would follow. And then I met Jimmy. So, there's something really special going on. And now I guess we got away from the main subject. Did you want to get back to House of Joseph?
Do we have any calls?
Yeah, callers. We're still looking for some callers. If you'd like to call in, USA 877-876-5227. If you have any interest in the House of Joseph or learning how to become a Joe, or if you're in Canada or the U.S., you can call 888-815-9756. And we've got a little less than 7 minutes to go. I'd love to have you call in. I don't know if we're going to get any callers or not, but what's Creator telling you to say right now?
Well, I would like to point your listeners to the Jerusalem connection to the Red Spirit. There's a very ancient Apache prayer which mentions the holy city of Jerusalem. Its translation, by the way, this was translated by Jay Lone Wolf, the man you mentioned at the top of the show who's in need of our prayers.
Right at the top of our BBS website.
Right. I spoke with him briefly this week. He's improving, but he still is not out of the woods. But he sent this this prayer for us to begin praying in the sweat lodges here. I'm just going to give you the translation, but it goes, I dance inside a circle of men and women, they say. Long life inside a circle is made, they say. Inside our circle dances the great spirit among us, they say. Having to prepare, he walks. Friends, they say, he walked back to Jerusalem, where the first tribe called home. And there's also this Hopi connection with Jerusalem, not just with the story I related from the Book of Mormon about Lehi ben Menashe ben Yosef and his son, but Chief Mike of the Hopi, who's been deceased now for about 10 years. But just before he rode away on his great white horse, he called a meeting of his people on Third Mesa at Old Araby, Arizona, and together with Hotavia on the Third Mesa. And these are the oldest continually occupied places in North America. But he told his people that it was time to reveal a great secret that had been told to him by his grandfather just before the great white horse came for his grandfather years earlier. He was saddened by his grandfather's spirit beginning to fade and the horse neighing outside of the door. So his grandfather, to lift his spirits, told him that someday he would be chief. And when the time came for him to ride away, he would reveal this secret, that Tawanasavi, the place the Hopi call their origin, and which is literally translated in the Book of Hopi, the, quote, center of the universe, was Jerusalem. Now, when I studied at the Orthodox yeshivas in Jerusalem, specifically the yeshiva Or Samea, there was a teacher there who taught on the mystical concept of the center of the universe, and that being Jerusalem because of what is known as the Eben Shakiyah, the foundation stone upon which the retaining wall of the Temple Mount was built, is there in Jerusalem. And it's a stone so large that no human hand could have touched it, and therefore it's believed to be the center of the universe. Now, when I was told that story by a Cherokee woman who knocked on my door one day, totally out of the blue, shortly after I'd returned from Jerusalem, I found it hard to believe. I had to go down and make a personal visit to Hopi land. And during that first visit, I spoke with the late chief's three daughters and one of their husbands. Jimmy Ten Rivers and I returned about 18 months later to seek the blessing of Medicine Man up on Third Mesa, and he confirmed Chief Mike's pronouncement. We also spoke with two Hopi at a campground near the Visitor Center on Second Mesa, and a lady who operates the museum and gift shop. Again, confirmation. The Hopi have appointed a delegation to go to Jerusalem. They're ready to go and to take with them very ancient pottery shards, but, of course, they have to await an invitation.
Wow. So that, you know, that really makes it official. You know, it wasn't just Chief Mike that declared that. It was his father, Mike Lanza, and his father, John Lanza.
Right.
So, well, excuse me, his father, you know, his father, he was Chief Mike, and his mother, Mina, and before that, old John Lanza. And, of course, this does tie in with our mutual teacher, John Red Hat. And, oh, by the way, there's links from our BBS website to a lot of interesting places, including information about John Red Hat. And we've got about a minute and a half to go for the end of the show. If you want to offer some parting words, and folks, I want to remind you, please support Ben Yosef. Maybe one of the most important things that you'll ever do. But anyway, what have you got for us in the last minute and a half?
Well, I do appreciate the opportunity to talk on your show tonight, Blue Otter. And we do have some very severe financial needs here. We're attempting to renovate a house that was purchased as a HUD repo. It had been vacant for several years. We were able to buy it, and now we're in the process of fixing it up so that these elders can start coming and have a place to stay and not have to worry about lodging and food while they're here. And we want to arrange it so they can stay for up to 20 days to attend our purification lodges, get to know the leaders in the community. We'll arrange transportation for them, everything. But this is going to cost us some money. And we are a very poor people. We have some severe needs. The city here, the town, I should say, has not been very nice to us. They've just increased our the charge to turn your utilities back on to $75 and have imposed a policy that you no longer have a month's leeway, but if you're delinquent 3 days on your utility bills, you're cut off.
Oh, my gosh. Folks, got about 5 seconds to go. We'll wake up Don. And tell them to kick off our our tag music. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Keepers for this week. We'll get together next week. Thank you so much, folks, and bye.
Listening to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council, whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine men of the Americas, the holy people of Africa, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times, from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Levant, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing long-hidden ancient wisdom in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy CD-ROM set, including over 1,400 megabytes of low-tech information on gardening, seed saving, foraging, anti-terrorism, unarmed self-defense, and prudent ways, means, and places to inhabit. All the old forgotten low-tech life ways are taught on our CD-ROMs, including the world's most extensive prophecy encyclopedias, from all major religious traditions of both the Eastern and Western hemispheres. Includes a 1,000-page prophecy intelligence briefing with comparisons and analyses of prophetic information, offering advice for preparations for the coming worldwide 3 days of darkness, as well as forecasts of geological earth changes coming soon to a planet under you. So learn how to survive the coming changes by purchasing the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy here at prophecykeepers.com radio. Inside the U.S. and most of Canada, dial toll-free 1-877-412-2012. Now be sure and stay tuned for the next important message. Visit our website at prophecykeepers.com or do a web search for the terms Native Prophecy and listen to on-demand interviews at your leisure, over 24 hours of listening at absolutely no cost to you.